summer.
Broadcasting 24/7, 365, you're listening to 101.9 FM and CFRC.ca, Kingston's only campus community radio station. Tune in for the best local programming.
Well, hey there, folks. It's time now for When We Wake. I'm your host, Andrew Shaver, and you've got me for just under an hour. On today's program, I chat with singer-songwriter Susie Ungerleiter. Susie Ungerleiter has long been one of Canada's most evocative songwriters, though for years, we've known her as Oh Susanna. But these days, Susie is releasing music under her own name. And she says it feels right. She says it feels like she's stripped herself of a costume that she'd been wearing. Her new album, Among the Evergreens, written mostly while walking forest trails near her home in Vancouver, is her most personal yet. Susie calls the songs chapters in her life, stretching from her own wild teenage years to now, raising a teenage daughter of her own. It's an album rooted in memory and change, about origin stories, about what it means to walk forward while constantly looking back, and about how becoming a parent can completely rewrite the way you understand your own past. In today's chat, we talk about the strange time travel of songwriting, the wild ride that is parenthood, and what happens when the life you're living becomes the material for your songs, up front and unfiltered. Here's my wake-up call with Susie Ungerleiter. Hello, Susie.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm doing well.
Great.
You're in Halifax now?
Yeah, I'm in Dartmouth. So, very close to Halifax.
That's fun. I love it there.
Did you ever live in Halifax?
No, but it was funny because before I moved back to Vancouver, I went to Dartmouth and I was staying actually in like Joel's complex. He let me stay in one of the apartments. Mm. So, and then I was walking around and I was like, ooh, the light here in Dartmouth is beautiful. It sort of reminds me of Vancouver.
Oh, yeah.
And I thought, maybe I should move to Dartmouth.
No kidding. Because of the light one day on Portland Street. Okay.
And then it was a sign to me, actually, that if I'm going to think about moving to Dartmouth because it looks like Vancouver or feels like it, then maybe I should just go to Vancouver. Yeah,
because you were living in Toronto at the time?
I was, yeah.
Okay. Well, look, this is a good place to start.
Okay.
I mean, we're talking about origin stories here.
Yeah.
I've read you write. I don't know how you put that, actually. I've read that you've written. You've said that you love origin stories and that you're constantly thinking about them, where people are and how they got there. And I mean, we've just fallen into that conversation. So Let's start there with yours.
Okay.
You're in Vancouver now. You almost lived in Dartmouth because of the light, but you were born in the States.
I was, but that does figure into my origin story, but it's, I don't remember living there because I was a baby when I moved here. I was lucky.
Oh, I see.
My folks decided to move to Canada, thinking, oh, we'll just be there for a couple of years and then we'll move on.
Right.
But then we stayed.
Where were you born?
Northampton, Massachusetts.
When you tour, I imagine you've, over the last 25 years, you've probably played Northampton or close to it. But is there any feeling you get when you go back that way?
Well, man, I haven't been there. I think I really only play there once with the Scrappy Bitch tour.
Oh, yeah, okay.
In 1990.
Oh, wow.
With
Kenny. Who was that? That was Veda Hille, Kenny Starr.
And me.
And you.
Just
yeah.
The three of us.
I saw that tour in Kingston, Ontario.
Oh my God, that was probably the first one at the mansion or something.
Maybe it was.
And I remember walking down, I think I'd never been to Kingston before, and I remember walking down the streets and we were drinking whiskey after the show, and I think I bought a MAC lipstick somewhere or had just bought it, and I remember it was the color Twig.
That's maybe the first time I've heard a color referred to as Twig. I mean, I can see it. I can picture it.
I know. I kind of wish I had that job.
No
of
kidding.
Naming colors.
What would you call? This is terrific radio, Susie. What would you call the? What would you call the color on my hat right now?
Okay, bend down. Oh well, morning light.
Oh, I like that so much. That's a Matt Barber song.
Is it?
Yeah, it's an early Matt Barber.
Oh,
song.
Oh my goodness, I must have been channeling that.
I guess so. My goodness. All right, the Scrappy Bitch tour. Yeah, mid '90s, mid to. I guess maybe late 90s. Anyways, yeah, I recall. Those are my very early, those are my early days. I began radio in those days at Queens with Matt Barber, the aforementioned Matt Barber.
Yeah, he told me some stories about how you guys started the radio show. And because I guess I was asking him, like, how did you start doing music?
I mean, he was doing music before the radio show. Even, you know, he was one of those guys that by the time I met him in first year university, we were on the same floor, three doors down from each other, which is amazing. He already had like a pockets full of 4-track cassette recordings of his songs. I thought that was just the coolest thing in the world, man, that he knew how to do that. Not only write songs, but how to record them.
I know.
And your husband, Cam Giroux, I was a huge fan. I mean, I still am, but like, I'm not in touch with Cam. But back in the day, in Weeping Tile Day, and like the first time I ever recorded a song of mine was way back when, and then I didn't again until I started, 5 or 6 years ago. But Cam, bless his heart, came in to CFRC, the radio station I'm talking about, having the show, and we set up in Studio A or whatever. And he played drums on 3 of my songs. I think I have, like, nothing happened with that album. Like, it wasn't an album. It was just recordings of 3 of my songs. And, I was so poor at the time, and I gave him $30. And he was just like, well, I guess that's, you know, that's the best you can do. And he didn't even bat an eye. And I think about that. I've thought about it for years.
That's not how he told me the story. He said, I went in there, and Andrew didn't have any money, and I had a fit and smash my drum kit.
When I did come into the money, because I'm very affluent now.
You're rich.
I'm
now?
Rich now. I've bought him several drum kits. Yeah, because the money's in podcasting and community radio is something I discovered. So you are on the cusp of releasing a really beautiful new album called Among the Evergreens, and it comes out June 6th, and I've had the pleasure of a few listens through to it, and I really love the songwriting. I love the sonic approach that you and Jim and Jim Bryson, the producer, have taken with it. It's a really beautiful album. My first listen, I was laying on my bed with my 3-week-old son sleeping on my chest and just listening to the album. And let me tell you, it was a perfect companion for that moment in my life.
That's very beautiful. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe you have a little baby.
I can't either.
You're just at the beginning of this journey. Speaking of origin stories, because a lot of the album is about that change that happens when you have a child. I mean, it's set, you know, as you were probably know, that it's got that one side of the record is then and one of the side is now, and the then is this transformation of like being a teenager into, you know, a young person wanting to do music, and then baby happening, marriage happening. Then you flip the record and then it's like teenage kid happening,
right?
And marital bumps,
sure,
and things like that. And so, yeah, it's funny because I didn't intend for the album to be so autobiographical and to be so narrative in the structure.
Oh, really?
It was just something I kind of saw. Yeah, it was weird. It was totally unplanned.
Oh, my goodness. I was so curious about how that structure, that sort of narrative arc of the album, the A side, B side, now and then, or then and now, came about. You just stumbled in it. You just identified it. How interesting.
Yeah, because Jim and I, we finished the album, and then, of course, you have to sequence it.
Sure.
For those nerds who actually listen top to bottom to an album, I mean, when I make something like that, I do have this album format still in my head. And because I grew up in 70s and 80s, where albums were very important and the sequence of them was very important. So I was like, how am I going to sequence it? And I started to look at the songs and I realized there was this story that the songs were telling. I knew they were chapters in my life. So I looked at the chapters and I realized I could organize them in this pretty much chronological sequence. And it was really cool to figure that out. It's like a puzzle that you click together and you realize that your subconscious is probably already doing it, but your conscious mind is just realizing and waking up to the pattern that it saw.
That happened in the sequencing of, like, you'd already recorded the songs, you'd written and recorded them.
I'd already recorded the songs and I didn't know how to
Wow, that's so
organize it,
interesting.
like I said. And then I just was like, ooh, oh, wait, I think.
What was that first moment? The ooh, wait. Like, wait, do you remember what it was?
Well, I probably was walking my dog and listening and kind of looking at the songs. And then I thought, and I knew there were these teenage focused on, songs of me being a teenager in Vancouver. And then I knew there were these songs about being in Toronto and doing music and having ambition and then having that be transformed by life. And then I knew there were songs about the present day. And then there were songs kind of, the last one kind of was a sneaky one that got under the wire called The Wilds. And it kind of pulled all the songs together because it was this circle moment of now I have a teenager. Now I am going to be the one seeing her launch into the world. Just like the whole album is kind of about me leaving home and going off and finding a life elsewhere in Toronto and then coming back again and being the mother and looking at my teenager and seeing what she's going through. A lot of my musical career has been, well, maybe half of it was imagining other people's lives and kind of writing myself into these narratives that weren't mine, or they were fictionalized versions. And so this is kind of the first time or one that it feels a lot more like, no, this is kind of a mirror image of me. There's still, of course, fictionalization and you're smoothing out the bumps to make it a story, as everybody will do when they're remembering things.
From Susie Ungerleider's Among the Evergreens, this is The Wilds. More of our wake-up call after this.
In among the evergreens of your hazel eyes, tiny field of flowers blooming in your mind, you sing across the canyon. It will reply when the woods come calling, blackbird, you will fly. One day you will go, one day by and by. Thank you. crimson sky.
Susie Ungerleiter with The Wilds on When We Wake. It's from her new album, Among the Evergreens, and I'm chatting with Susie all about it on today's show. On the first side, you talk about the sort of the narrative arc that takes you to Toronto and all the ambition that you have for musical superstardom and, you know, what we want when we're making music, certainly when we're younger. And there's that song College Street kind of encapsulates that. This image that in the song, I love this, that you've got this contrast of you as a young artist becoming a parent and you're walking down the same street, but everything feels different. You know, I do have a 3.5-year-old, so I've been in this, it's not just 3 weeks, but it hasn't been that long, but it's, you know, it's going on 4 years now, but I recognize that shift. And so I'd love, you know, if we could talk about that, I'd love to hear from you, like, how did you reconcile that shift in identity as it was happening?
I don't think I did reconcile. It was just happening.
Right.
I think I wrote that song looking back.
Uh-huh.
And that moment of having a baby in the back seat had passed for almost 2 decades. And I think that's the thing. You are in the minute, you're in the moment of it, or you're like, mm-hmm. What happened? I don't, you know, no one can describe what your life is going to be like as a parent. Even if they've been a parent, they don't know what your individual experience is going to be. So, and I had, it kind of blindsided me because, you know, also the times had changed. You know, if someone my mother's age told me what it was like to be a parent, it would be kind of different in, you know, years later. Sure. Because of the whole social context has changed. But yeah, I did not reconcile. I think I was fighting a lot of the time. Like, I didn't know how to figure out who I was. And it's a little bit about that loneliness of not knowing who you are anymore. And that's what the song speaks to, learn to sing again. And so you kind of lose your voice, or you lose your way. You don't even know what you're supposed to be singing or who you are. So you have to learn again to get back to it.
And how do you do that?
The song didn't turn out, you know, when I first started writing it, I wrote it with Sam Parton, who was in Be Good Tanya's, and we were on a writing residency kind of together. And originally it wasn't like I'm gonna write a song about myself. I was right. We were just reminiscing about Toronto and how all these musicians we know were saying they were gonna quit. And that whole notion of when you love this thing, you try to make a living at it, it doesn't work that well. So you think, I'm gonna quit.
Mm.
And or should I quit? Or what does it mean to me? I mean, and then I remember I had a therapist and I would talk to her and say, should I quit? Or I don't know what to do. Because it can be really confusing when the world measures success in certain, you know, materialistic ways. And she said, you can't quit, actually, Susie. You know why? And I said, why? And she said, because music is you.
Mm.
You can't quit yourself. You can't. It is inside of you. It will change. What you do will change, and how you approach it and how you see it will change.
Mm-hmm.
But it's impossible mm-hmm. to quit. And it helped me to kind of learn to sing again in a different way. And you know, the idea of learning to sing is, you know, a metaphor. It's literal and yet metaphoric meaning of how do you do this thing that you love when the circumstances have changed? And again, it's walking down the same street, but you've changed, or that the buildings have been torn down, or whatever it is. So, and that's kind of a life thing where you're, you know, we all have carry these maps in our minds. If we're lucky, if we haven't lost our memories, we have mm-hmm. these maps in our minds and these stories in our minds, and we walk through the world and we recognize, we look at a little detail and it reminds us of something that we lived through. And we're different now, or maybe we're not. Maybe we're not different. It's just, you know, those kinds of things. I really love contemplating that, like how do you move through space and time? And it takes a lifetime to kind of reconcile like how much you've changed and how little you've changed, or how maybe you know, as a musician, I always say that, you know, we're kind of immature and we have license to be, because we don't have the same kinds of pressures to grow up. You could kind of embrace your adolescence and who you were and how you know, your adolescent dreams, and still kind of stay there. But you know, the truth is we do grow up, and what does that mean? What do you want to keep? What do you want to throw away? What do you want to sing about? What do you want to, who do you want to be? What do you want to, you know, the things that you were, maybe they're not helping you anymore.
From Susie Ungerleiter's latest album, Among the Evergreens, here's a song that grapples with those questions. It's College Street on When We Wake.
Roll west down College Street. Streetcar rocks you to sleep. Your friends at the Interstate wait for you again. Late nights at the wrecking yard. Dreamed you'd be a superstar. The dotted line on the record deal, calling out your name. So you get behind the wheel, your old guitar, your sword and shield. Take every show that you can steal, alone upon a stage. Your friends at the Interstate were never seen again. Between the sun and the winter freeze, like a tree you lost your leaves. Will they grow again in spring? Will you ever be the same? So here you are behind the wheel, as alone as you can feel. Take every second you can steal and learn to sing again. And learn to sing again.
That's Susie Ungerleiter with College Street on When We Wake. Now back to my wake-up call with Susie.
When you think about when you play or listen to your songs from years ago, how does it feel before the change?
It's weird to listen to that stuff. I mean, I don't really listen to it often. But again, I'm about to do this show where I'm going to pull out these old songs because it is a show that's based on, you know, how the blues has inspired a bunch of artists. I'm doing it with a few other artists. And I'm like, oh, I don't feel like the blues are in my music anymore, but they used to be.
So in order to be true to the task at hand, you have to go back to your older songs where the blues were present.
Yeah.
How do the blues show up?
Well, it's funny because last night I was listening to this record, just Spotify put it on because it's in one of my saved records. It's this Folkways record of Pete Seeger and Big Bill Brunsey having a conversation with Studs Terkel, much like we're having a conversation.
Yeah.
And on Chicago public radio in the 50s, and they're talking about what is the blues and what is folk music. And of course Pete's talking about folk music and Big Bill Brunsey's talking about the blues, and if you think about what the context was, there's, you know, a white man and a black man who are considered totally unequal in the society at the time, and yet they're having this conversation completely as equals, and it was kind of a radical thing, I think, that this was occurring on the radio. Anyway, I was obsessed with records like that. I would listen to the records like that. I was living in Montreal and wanting to do music, and I was just captivated by these old recordings, Folkways records, field recordings, this kind of lonesome sound. And when I first started, I really wanted to evoke that and sing it. And I also was a big Stones person in grade six. I was like obsessed with the Stones. And of course, they're so influenced by the blues. Mm-hmm. So that kind of sound, that loneliness expressed through music, was so important to me. Haunting and real. And yet now that I look at it, I'm like, it's a form that comes out of not only black experience, but generally, yes, you know, Southern poverty and racism, experiencing racism and slaves and all this sort of stuff. And so yet, so it feels a little bit weird to feel like it was so evocative for me because I'd never lived any of that experience. And yet there was something about it that helped me get in touch or express the dark feelings that I felt. And that I think, you know, honestly, my life has really not been hard, but still I had this feeling of loss. Like I didn't know who I was. I didn't know what I wanted to do, or I did want to do music and I didn't know, you know, before I really started doing music, I knew I had this dream, but I was so blocked from it. I couldn't figure out how to activate it or be in it. And so I was quite depressed. And I think that kind of music helps you. It's weird because it is the blues. Like you're singing the blues, you're sad, you know, but yet you're turning the sadness into something that you can express in a socially acceptable way. And I think that was the thing. I just didn't know how to deal with these strong feelings that I was having. And it was funny because that was the key for me to get out of feeling that way, was that I started doing more music and I was singing the blues. So it kind of, it helped me to kind of find a community and to find the thing I needed to do and what I was born to do.
Which was to write songs, to make music.
Yeah, and to sing.
To sing.
I think writing songs is so important to me. I love it. But the sing, it's the singing part that was the most, you know, the physical act of singing. And I forget it sometimes because I'm busy just doing my thing and I'm still kind of shy to sing around other people. So if people are around, I'm like, oh, I can't do it. And so it's the physical act of singing. It kind of helps me go through these feelings and find joy.
What does it feel like? What is that physical act? I understand how it manifests itself, but it, like emotionally, how does that physical act manifest itself?
Well, I mean, there's all these studies now that how it helps you have endorphins and things like that. And breath. I think often I'm forgetting to breathe. I don't breathe that well.
Yeah,
so
right.
I think that just by, it's like yoga.
It seems silly to say, but 100%. Yeah.
You know, I think I wore, you know, I come from a line of warriors. So I think worrying is kind of in my DNA. So the part of the survival technique is holding your breath somehow. So it's just about breathing. And I know I'm going on a lot about this stuff. I don't even know. It's weird. I'm in my bedroom. So I feel like I can just say whatever it's pillow talk right now.
Pillow talk when we wake. I like that. That's probably a good segment for this show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. As a kid, did you understand that, how much joy singing brought you?
Yeah, I think I did, but I think I lost touch with it, or I felt like people were going to judge me about it. And
why? What happened? What was that?
Adolescence and just, I don't know.
General insecurity that hits
general
us
insecurity,
in adolescence.
And then also, I don't know if you remember or were alive. Yes, I think you were alive.
Probably. I was probably, if you were.
You remember that compassion was not a thing.
Okay, sure.
And that things were scrappy.
Right.
There wasn't this discussion about bullying. There wasn't a discussion about treating people with respect other than just following the rules. You know, so it was normal to just rip other people to shreds. It was, you knew that that was going to happen, or it was a feeling of,
and you got ripped.
Better watch out, because someone is going to see something in you that you care about as a soft spot.
So don't show it.
Don't show that.
Yeah. That's really kind of heartbreaking.
It is. But it kind of what makes, what drove me, I think, in some ways too. Because it helped me go, I'm going to show you. It's sort of like, as a young person, this is just a young person talking, like, I'm going to do this thing and you're going to, and I'm going to like shear your head off with my singing. And that, when I first got on stage, that was kind of what it was about. It was like, I'm going to shear your head off with sound.
Yeah.
And now it's so much more about communion and happiness and vulnerability and sharing and way less ego driven, I'm hoping. I'm still working on that. And yeah, just, it's a gentler, more vulnerable task, but that's from going through this whole journey. I mean, journey is such an annoying new agey word now, but
going through your life.
Yeah. Going through your life.
Sure. That included becoming a mother, that, and dealing with the sort of the conflict of identity that we're talking about, found therein. But and also, I imagine going through your breast cancer diagnosis. Mm-hmm. I mean, all these things that are put in front of you as you know, could be seen as an obstacle, and yet you overcome. And
well, that's kind of a Hollywood version. Not to say that what you're like, you hope to do that. You hope to do that, but. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's never one way or the other. One day it feels like I've done that. And other days I feel like I haven't done that. I mean, and
because you're a human being.
Yeah, it's like
yeah.
Life does stuff to you, or, you know, things happen. And like I said, what has happened to me has just been super normal and average and nothing mm-hmm. really horrible. It's just what happens. And I think that's the thing that's surprising. I think when you're young, you don't have any clue about what's going to happen, good or bad.
Well, here's Susie looking back at one of those moments with all the love, ache, and clarity that time brings. It's Sirens from Susie Ungerleiter. More of our chat after this.
Sometimes in the summertime, we would be caught dry. Hey, Mom, can we go for a ride? The songs on the stereo fill up the silence. DJ on the passenger side, drown the sirens in my mind. You and me in the summer wind, wanna believe we'll begin again. Way I see you with all your friends, so light in the light. Missed calls on my telephone after the party. Hey, love, can you tell me what's wrong? You're walking all alone down in Lynn Valley, choked up and so withdrawn. And the sirens are singing on. You and me in the summer wind, wanna feel like I did again. The way I see you with all your friends, so light in a light. You and me in the summer's end, wanna feel like I did again. When you reached out and held my hand on the passenger side. Please forgive me if I lie, spinning slowly for a while, the siren singing in my mind, in my mind.
From her latest album, Among the Evergreens, that is Susie Ungerleiter with Sirens on When We Wake. Now back to my wake-up call with Susie.
I mean, often, you know, in this context where we're looking back, we're, you know, in this album, we're talking about songs that take us from you as a teenager to now, like then and now. And we would often, you know, say, well, so what would you say to that teenager? But what would that teenager say to you? What does young Susie have to say to you right now, you think?
Get over yourself.
Really? Yeah.
I don't know. I the young one would probably say, get some of your edge back. Don't lose it all.
Ah. Yeah, you lost some of your edge?
Well, that's kind of what life does to you. And hopefully, I mean, sure. I think that's actually good. I think it's good to soften.
That's the compassion we're talking about.
But I think my young self would be like, don't go too far.
What about your now self? Do you think, have you gone too far? Do you want more of your edge back?
I think maybe I had a certain definite, you know, I had more black and white and more definite stances when I was younger. And I think sometimes now I see too much of the gray, or, you know, or the subtlety of something, and it prevents me from going, no, this is what's going to happen, or this is what I believe in, or this is what I'm going to aim for.
Right.
I think that, you know, I love those shades of in between the black and the white, but I think sometimes it's good to just be like, no, this is the way to go. This is clarity.
Do you perceive that as a weakness then? Your inability to declare the clarity of this is the way it's going to go one way or the other?
I think it comes from the same place from when I was younger, what my hard edge came from. It's an insecurity thing. It's like, fear drove me to be edgy or to wear a shield. But then now maybe fear prevents me from being more definite and speaking my mind.
I hear that.
So
sure, I can.
I don't know. I don't spend. It sounds like I spend so much time thinking about these things.
No, I'm just asking.
I'm actually just having a fresh conversation with you instead of following the whole press release kind of thing.
Yeah. What about your daughter? And what is she edgy? Like, how do you see yourself in her?
Yeah, I think that she. Makes me realize, like, oh, I'm still not a fully formed human, and that's okay. She does remind me of myself, and that's hard sometimes, but also fun and kind of beautiful.
Yeah.
She's also different from me and seems much wiser about stuff.
Oh yeah.
And, can see, well, she's got that ability. Like, I think when I was young too, I could see, I still think that I can see a lot about what someone's, you know, what's motivating them or what they're doing and the subtleties and what they're maybe trying to cover up or what they're trying to say, or this kind of sensitivity to body language and voice and that kind of thing. So she can do it to me really well, like, you know, oh, I see you're doing this thing to me or saying this. Is that truly honest, or are you just trying to defend yourself, or you know, those kinds of things.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's hard to, I kind of joke around saying, like, there's nothing like a teenager to make you feel so uncool.
Oh, man.
And I think when I was young, that was kind of the thing that I needed to be so much. Like, trying to be cool was such a huge thing. I mean, now, of course, less so, but it's funny because she really is like, no. You aren't cool anymore,
right,
Mom? It's sorry.
How could you be? How could you be in her world? No way. What do you know about her world? Which honestly, like, actually, it's kind of frightening. Like, what do we know about their
maybe
world?
Not a lot, but I do think it's interesting because I love being around her friends and hearing them talk about stuff because they're the same age I was in some of those songs I wrote. And I just enjoy hearing the kind of banter and and it doesn't seem that far away from where I was, actually, the way we talked, my friends and I, the friends that I really loved, talk to each other in that same way where you have it's like a sibling relationship.
Yeah.
But it's funny because sometimes there are questions that they have for me and I'm like, oh, like one time my daughter asked me, this is a while ago, how do you put on eyeliner, or what was the deal with eyeliner? And I'm like, yeah, eyeliner was a big deal for me and my punk rock friends, and I had to talk to her about that, what that was. And then the other day my friend who's queer, she came over and she started talking about being, you know, her first experiences of being out as a lesbian and what she had to do and where she was and the bars she went to and the people she met and her experiences. And it just sounded like another world compared to now. And I was like, are you listening to this? Like, this is your, these are your elders talking.
And she's like, no, that's exactly why I'm not listening.
Yeah, exactly.
Featuring Susie's daughter on the keys, it's I'm Sorry and You're Right.
You said I cornered you in the bathroom, that I should stop freaking out of you. I'm here to say I'm sorry and you're right, right, right. It's just I don't know how to help you when it's you that is hurting you. So I get angry and we fight, fight, fight. I've made so many lame mistakes, I'll make a million more. But for now, I'll try to mend the wounds I've caused before. You say you can't say what you really feel. That's okay, I am always here. I'll open up my heart and I will listen. Come on, let's go out and shake these blues. There's a whole wide world that waits for you. With open arms and you will walk right in.
Daughter on I'm Sorry and You're Right. They just happened to be rolling tape as her daughter started improvising on the Wurlitzer, and what do you know, it made the final cut. Now back to the conclusion of my wake-up call with Susie.
On this album, you're using your name, Susie Ungerleiter, and on the previous album, my name is Susie Ungerleiter. That was the sort of debut of you came out with your name. Prior to that, it was decades, right? Was it 20 years of Oh Susanna?
Yeah, something like that.
I think I understand through our conversation why you started with the moniker, Oh Susanna. And then what brought you to the sort of revelation of Susie Ungerleiter in lieu of Oh Susanna?
Yes, at the beginning, it felt like the perfect shorthand to tell people what I was trying to evoke musically. But as I went on, I started to change and I started to get interested in different kinds of music and be influenced by it. Mm. It just sort of happened naturally that I would gravitate towards different sounds and different ways of talking about things. And it was much less in a genre of like folk Americana, even though that's still describing, people still talk about my music in those terms, which is totally fine. But just I think as I got closer to telling my own stories or things that I lived through, or it became less about evoking this kind of American landscape, I guess.
Right.
And twang. And so I was like, oh God, you know, I feel like, oh, Susanna is wonderful. I never would have used this word when I was young, like branding, because it helps people understand what they're going to hear. But then I was like, but it doesn't anymore, because what they're going to hear isn't really that anymore. But then I kind of thought, well, but how do I go about shifting, or what would I do? I kind of love having this little shield between me and the audience, and or a little message to send them.
Sure.
To a little stage to stand in.
A layer of art.
A costume, yes, or something.
Exactly.
And I'm like, but my costume is changing, or what I'm feeling inside and what's coming out is different. So what do I do about that? Mm-hmm. And I would kind of let it lie for a while. But then the origins of the song started to creep in and rear its ugly head, because George Floyd was killed, and people started to look at these things that we took for granted around us as like childhood songs. And Oh Susanna as a childhood song has been, you know, whitewashed, because it actually was a creation from a man who was trying to use what he saw as plantation dialect. And, you know, Stephen Foster wrote it in this, what he saw as how Black people talked. He wrote it in that way. And then the lyrics also have some pretty disgusting language in it, and imagery, which has all been changed to make it palatable for now. But people were like, you know what this song is, or what it used to be.
And did you?
Yeah, I did know.
Yeah.
I did know, because I, you know, being someone who likes to look at old stuff, I looked at the original sheet music, and but it just seemed like a relic from the past. But when people started to talk to me about it, I was like, yeah, actually, that is really something I do not want to evoke with my music. I don't believe in that. I kind of think it's interesting how you don't want to necessarily erase things. I don't believe in erasing what happened or what the song is or the fact that I used it. I think in itself, it's a little glimpse into America and how now we're aware of, or think about much more sensitively about how colonization formed this country, and even Canada and the US, how it, you know, slavery was really the way that it was possible. Mm-hmm. So the song in itself kind of shows that it's a very complex thing. Minstrelsy is such a weird, complex thing, but at the heart of it is stereotypes and violence against Black people. So I was like, no, I don't want to have violence against Black people be something that I'm associated with or advocating. And people who don't know me and have any clue about me, they might just see that name and be like, oh, and activated and think about that. So I thought about what to do, and I realized that I needed to let it go. It wasn't easy.
Can imagine it wasn't.
And even now it's kind of strange to be using my name, but that's part of me facing uncomfortable things.
Let's end today's chat with a song that speaks to the necessity of finding forgiveness, contemplates the fragility of our fleeting lives. It's Golden from Susie Ungerleiter.
Lie beside me, breathing you inside me. Your shoulder is my pillow, your breath that makes a song. Then I remember we won't be here forever, but we are fragile and one day we'll be gone. so bitter and sweet, and somehow we keep shining through, shining through. How many years do we have now till that shining sphere it comes down and the world turns blue, world turns blue.
Lighter's Golden from her latest album, Among the Evergreens, an album about life's layers, the losses, the love, and finding grace in it all. That's it for When We Wake this week. I'll be back next week with a chat with Logan Richard.
Saturday mornings. Whether you're waking up in a stranger's apartment or enjoying some time with the family, you need a nutritional breakfast for your ears. So join me, DJ Overeasy, for Making Bacon every Saturday morning from 8 until 10 on CFRC 101.9 and CFRC.ca.
Did you know that New Leaf Link offers day programming for adults with developmental disabilities? We serve families in Kingston and South Frontenac. Our program focuses on arts, healthy living, and community connections, including summer camp. New Leaf Link's caring staff and talented instructors provide a place for everyone to learn together and build friendships. If you or someone you know would like to join our program, please visit newleaflink.ca for more details. Together, we can grow, connect, and belong.
Your true, true friend loves you just as you are.
Hey there, Kingston. Looking for the latest in arts and culture? Join me, Ellie Sturton, Friday 3 to 4 p.m. for the Kingston Curator, featuring